Hello and welcome to the Misty Blue Days of Our Lives podcast. I'm your host, Misty Blue from mistybluedream.com. That's MISTIBLUDREAM.com. Because everyone spells my name wrong. And I'm here to talk about a little bit of everything. So thank you for tuning in. And as a legal disclaimer, nothing said here on this podcast should be used in the place of medical or professional advice, as the intent of the content is to share personal information, opinions, and thoughts. And today we have Red. I'm interviewing Red, a recovering addict who is now 4+ years sober. According to the American Addiction Center, almost 21 million Americans have at least one addiction, yet only 10% receive treatment. We are currently amid a viral pandemic experiencing isolation and changes which we have never seen in our lifetime. So this is a great topic in general, and I'm sure during this time that it's very challenging. So go ahead and introduce yourself.
Well, I'm Ren. I'm also called Alicia Camatelli. So I've been sober since March 7th, 2016.
Wow.
Yeah, I got sober at 30.
So let's go ahead and get to the nitty gritty. What was your addiction? How did you fall into addiction and for how long? Tell us all the juicy details.
All the stuff. Probably my main was painkillers, like narcotics, opiates, heroin. I started off with alcohol.
Yeah.
And that was like the easiest one. But then pretty much like alcohol, then the pills. And then it was kind of like whatever opiate or whatever I could get my hands on. But I would pretty much do anything
yeah.
that was in front of me.
So when was like the initial step into like from alcohol into trying your first pill or deciding you wanted to try another pill? I know some people, a lot of times it's common that they get prescribed that after a procedure or surgery.
Nope.
And then sometimes it's just like the environment or the people that you're around.
The people I was around, I think, because, I was probably like 22-ish, because I drank a couple of times before then. I really wasn't a big drinker, because I would throw up.
You know,
like, it wasn't the coolest, but after a breakup, that's when it's kind of, started drinking every day, and I was really skinny. I was like 118 pounds. So then I was like the new chick at the bar and getting attention,
yeah.
and alcohol made me be that person that I wanted to be.
Yeah.
So that just, getting into a relationship right after that, and pills were introduced, but it was just like, it was normal. Like everybody that I was hanging out with at that time, was doing it. And
yeah.
I don't think at the time that they knew for themselves that it was so addictive.
Yeah.
Because it was so cheap and it was like everybody was starting off that I was hanging out with at the same time. I remember saying no, no, no. And then yes.
Yeah.
I did.
I mean, we're in Florida too, which Florida is actually considered kind of a hot spot for that, especially back in like the early 2000s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, I can see how you can kind of fall into that when you're out and you're partying and hanging out with friends and,
yep.
In your 20s and it's just like someone busts that out.
But it was more introduced like an aspirin, like here's some ibuprofen and that's
wow.
how it was. And you're seeing all these other people do it and they're like, they had their shit together.
No, this is my answer.
They had their shit. They had everything like what it seemed to be put together, but like
right.
I said, what I know now is it was the beginning.
Yeah,
hold ourselves together pretty well in the beginning. It's when it escalated, when prices got higher, when a lot of people started doing it, and the quantities,
yeah.
and the pill farms and all that. It just
it
downhill spiraled
so
really fast.
And then when would you say it turned from just trying it here and there when you're out to like, I need it now, how can I get it?
It was the first day.
Oh, like instant. Dang.
And like I said, it was someone that I was dating at the time, and he would put it out in front of me, And then it's like, you know, I was so in love and thought he was the coolest guy. And I just, you know, put it out there every day. And then one day I was like, oh, I don't feel good. Like,
yeah,
what is wrong with me? Like, and I didn't know I was withdrawing. I had no idea. Like, I'm like that naive. Like I said, like, I've only done, like, drank a few times before that. And maybe I hadn't done, I maybe smoked pot like 10 times before, like,
yeah,
my early 20s. Like, and so I was like, what is wrong with me? And he's like, oh, let me go do this, and came back. And then I was like, I didn't realize, like,
wow,
that's where it was taking me.
Yeah.
So every day.
So I love Bill Nye because I'm an aspiring scientist.
Yes.
And he's a really cool scientist. So he actually has a show on Netflix right now, and there's actually an episode on addiction. It's really cool. And I wanted to quote something that he said because I thought it was, like, super important, and hopefully people can kind of change their perspectives on their opinions of addiction. He said, "The definition of a disease to me would be an abnormal physiological process brought on by a relationship between the genetics of the individual and the environment that creates a set of signs and symptoms that progress in a predictable way, which we can call natural history. And by affecting the natural history, we can create a predictable response to treatment. That is a disease, and addiction fits that." And I thought that was a really cool way to put it in perspective, because, you know, a lot of people have that opinion that, you know, addiction is a choice. But if you think about it, you know, we're all addicted to fucking something. I mean, come on, we all are. I mean, our phones, social media, gambling, food, sex even. These are all, you know, things that produce like a stimuli. And so people don't understand that addiction is not only drugs and alcohol. I mean, addiction can be behavioral, you know, in many different forms. And most of you listening are probably addicted to social media, because I know we probably are too. I mean, you know, so it's all just, it's all the same, except, you know, obviously some are more effective than others. Like, food can be, you know, a tough one too, because
yes,
that can affect your health as well. And of course, drinking, and all of these are coping. They're all, it's like self-medication or ways to cope from trauma, which all of us have trauma. Let's face it, we all do.
And I mean, that's the thing, is like, I could have a drink and it affects me the way it does, or a pill or whatever, but you can do it and be normal. But when I would drink, and even in the beginning, I would throw up. You would throw up because I drank so much.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know how to stop. Same thing with, you know, pills and the heroin. I didn't know how to stop. Like, I could have so many, and I'm like, okay, because I would have to go every day to get it. So I'm going to have this much in front of me, and I'm like, I'm going to save this for the next couple of days.
Wow.
It didn't happen. Like,
yeah,
if I have it, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Like, I had no self-control.
And
that,
people don't think about that when they go out to the bars, when they're like, oh, I'm going to have a beer with some friends. And then the next thing you know, they have like shots, and then they do another shot, and then they're, you know, crawling home or whatever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's the same concept, and it's just like social media. Like, for me, I always say, like, okay, I'm going to cut down. Like, I need to chill out. I get my little report on my phone. How much you were on social media for the week. And I'm just like, oh, but you know, it's like habitual at that point. Your thumb and your brain, you just pick up your phone, and that's what you do. You open up the Facebook or Instagram, and it's the same thing.
Yeah. And it becomes routine. So it's like easy. Like, I know what I need every day to be okay. And I, but like you said, phone, food. I like food too.
Sugar.
Put some chocolate in front of me. If it's there, if it's Oreos, like, I'm gonna eat the whole thing.
Yeah. Take it away.
I don't know what one is.
I remember for me, like, when I stopped drinking, in the beginning, because I was like, I'm not doing this because I have a problem. I'm doing this because I just wanted to, like, lose weight and have a change.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I'd go on these breaks or whatever. And I remember going to a restaurant after work, and I would usually go by myself. I was kind of a lone wolf. So I'd go to the restaurant, and, like, cause I'd walk there here in the village. It's like easy to do. So you, it's like almost like in one hand was where my beer would go, and then I'd have the menu, and I'd be looking for, and it's like, mm-hmm. it's just so routine and habitual. So I remember just being kind of like, this is weird. I, okay, I'm not drinking my beer. It's like something you do, like when you're killing time, mm-hmm. or just, it's like, it just gets so woven into your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, it kind of hit me at that point how bizarre it was to not have that normal thing for mm-hmm. me. And then to have to like try to adapt. And that's when I realized after like that first week or two, I was like, wow, this was really in my life more mm-hmm. than I realized,
mm-hmm.
you know? So what moment in your life that you, that pushed, what is the moment in your life that pushed you to get clean? And how did you transition from addiction to sobriety, like the process and what you do to keep yourself on track?
I mean, what, like, I think I was just tired of the groundhog day, every day. And it wasn't like I was living like a healthy lifestyle. I worked, but I only worked to make drug money. Like that's yeah. like it. Like I didn't do anything fun. Like if my family wanted to see me, usually it was like come in the shop to make sure I'm still alive. Like, you know, that's really what it was. Because I wouldn't answer the phone because I don't want to answer the phone and then give me a hard time. Because they would. And they tried everything they could. Like, they really did. And now me being clean, I realized, like, what I put them through.
But it's hard because you have to remember, too, you can't change anyone. Like, nope. You can't make them change. And it's really, it can be frustrating being, you know, on that end. But it's really, it's up to the person to make the change on their own.
Yeah, so it was just like that groundhog day, and I was tired, and I remember sitting in my apartment, which my drug dealer was sharing my apartment, and it's like, I'm like, just cleaning that place one day, and I'm like, what, like, this isn't normal. It just, like, kind of clicked.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, because I've been living a lifestyle for so long of, like, literally working, getting drugs, and, like, I'm not socializing anymore, and I'm just like, who am I?
Yeah.
And I'm still trying to figure that out, but that's really where it is. And then I made that decision, and I knew for myself that I had to go to rehab.
Oh, wow.
There's no way that I had tried beforehand to like, downsize my amounts or switch it up. Like it might not be so bad.
Yeah.
Like, but it, none of those things had worked for me. I knew I went to treatment in Maryland. That's mm-hmm. where I'm, you know, originally from. So I knew that I had to get away because there's no way that I could, for me personally,
yeah.
not saying other people that can do it, I just knew I needed to get away.
And they typically recommend that too, right? Because you're away from your friends and you're,
mm-hmm.
you're away from the drug dealers,
mm-hmm.
And you're away from kind of that environment that you can fall easily back into, right?
A lot of people say, yeah, change the people, places, and things. Not all of us can do that. Because I still, you know, I came back after about 2 months. I came back. I'm still living in the apartment. Kicked the drug dealer out, which wasn't easy. You know, and I still work at the same business that I work at. So it's like, but it's like healthier. Like I was the only one that was toxic really at my job, you know, and like my place was fine, you know, but it's like the people
yeah.
were a big thing. Because some people think the people that you just hang out with are, it's just all about drugs. No, I had some really good friends.
Yeah.
And I just had one of them pass, like,
yeah.
you know, this, you know, couple months ago. So it's like, these people are really your friends and some people think that they're not, but like I took it, but it was my choice to step away for my healthy lifestyle.
Yeah.
I wanted to change. So I had to say goodbye to that person in my own way. But you got to do what's healthy for you. And yeah, like I said, there's no way. I don't believe that I could have went to treatment down here
mm-hmm.
and think that I wouldn't have had my drug dealer or friend come up and get me. Because I didn't sleep for the first 11 days.
Wow.
I felt horrible. Like I had acute withdrawals for at least 6 months. So that
was
difficult.
I didn't know they could last that long.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Fun.
But yeah, so for me, like there's no way in my mind that I thought that I could deal
yeah.
with it, and I wanted to be done, But did I think I'd be 4.5 years clean? No.
Yeah.
I thought I was like taking a pit stop. I was taking a break. Let's not make this every day. I didn't think I'd say bye forever, or at least
wow.
planning on saying bye forever.
And that's also kind of helped you to focus on your family and the
yes.
people that were there. Because I know for me personally, when I quit drinking, I thought all of my bar friends were like my ride or die, like best
yep.
friends for life. And I have all of these great friends that I kind of would blow off because, you know, they weren't meeting me at the bar or whatever.
Mm.
And that was more fun and interesting because who knows
mm.
what would happen that night. And I felt like all of my good friends who really cared about me, who weren't taking advantage of me, they were all kind of getting put on the back burner.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I realized like those friends weren't returning my calls because I wasn't going to the bar with them, I was like, holy crap. So these people weren't, you know, so in my particular case, they weren't necessarily good
mm.
friends, but I had like all of you guys and stuff
mm.
who I felt like I kind of didn't give the right amount of attention to. Instead, I was focused
mm.
on these assholes, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like you said, like they're, it's because you've changed and
yeah.
like you're not fitting theirs. And like you said, some of those people that I'm talking about, to me, they were really good friends.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that they're healthy.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, when you change like that, people aren't ready to change, and it's hard for some people.
Yeah.
But I'm grateful to say the multiple people that I was using with at the time, they're clean now.
Oh, cool.
Like there's three of them that are, you know, I still keep in contact with now that they're clean.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really proud of them for doing that. But yeah, like you said, it just,
yeah. But, and now you have you're closer with, I feel like, your family and stuff.
Like definitely. Before I went to
Auntie Red.
I'm an aunt. I'm awesome. I'm the cool aunt. But with my twin sister, you know, Alana, I think when I went into rehab, we weren't talking.
Oh, wow.
Which
is crazy because if you
we're
know,
so close
twins
now.
Twins are typically, you know, they're so close and they have their own language and they share
mm-hmm.
everything together. So to be at a point where you're not talking,
it was
yeah.
really hard.
Yeah.
But I think I had a lot of resentments.
Mm-hmm.
But really it's, you know, my things that I was doing and she didn't know how to react. Cause
yeah.
you know, you're growing up with this person and you see, you know, she's seeing me change and I'm lying about everything. And
yeah.
she's like, yeah, I know you. Like, this isn't you.
Yeah.
So we just kept fighting, and even with my mom, I would say my mom and my sister were the two big ones that I distanced myself
mm-hmm.
from, and I didn't want to hang out with because they knew me.
Yeah.
And I didn't want them to.
Yeah.
So, but they tried that, you know, they did the whole "I love you" thing, get clean. They
mm-hmm.
tried crying. They tried, you know, being mean. They tried to be like funny. They, you know, they, I think they went through all of the little feelings
yeah.
to see if that would trigger. And the only reason I know that is because I've had to do it in the past 4 years because
mm-hmm.
I've dated addicts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, supposed to be in recovery and they had relapsed
yeah.
and continued to relapse. So.
Which must have been really hard being, trying to stay clean yourself
yeah.
and having to
yes.
deal with someone who, you know, wasn't.
Especially when they're living in your home.
Yes,
mm-hmm. that's very hard. And I don't always make the right choices, even clean. And there's a lot of things in the past 4.5 years I would tell other people not to do, but it's easier saying, giving advice and be like, don't do this, but then I would do it too.
Yeah.
Especially when your heartstrings are like attached, you know what I mean? It's really hard.
So, and you do a lot of cool stuff. Like you travel and you know, on your days off, you make it fun. You go to pumpkin patches recently.
Yes.
You used to go to, before the pandemic, you go to soccer games, even if it was by yourself.
Yeah.
And I love that because that's kind of how I was too. I was like, I'm going to have fun. And if no one's going to join me because they'd rather be at a bar, they're busy.
Do it
myself. I'm going to do it myself. So what do you recommend to like have the excitement in your life or to keep yourself distracted or busy? I mean, would you say that that's something that helps to keep you sober?
Yes. But I also had to look at a lot of doing all those things. It's why am I doing that? Some of that's because I get in these depressed states that I'm like, so I do go, I'm not saying that I don't do this on like a regular basis and
mm-hmm.
I'm fun, but I have to like kind of pay attention to why I'm doing certain things because I need to fulfill something. So sometimes I'm doing all these crazy things because I'm feeling lonely or I'm feeling down inside. So I'm doing all these things. But I do a lot of things is because I haven't lived.
Yeah.
I haven't lived.
You're making up for lost time.
Yeah. It was about 10 years when I really started, probably like 9 years. I would say 9 years when it was like really hard, heavy drinking and using drugs. And I feel like I missed out on so much, like my 20s, like missed out my 20s. And now 30s, obviously, like have been the best years of my life because I'm sober.
Yeah.
And wasn't easy.
Well,
and
like
I still go through hard times.
The Groundhog Day, it's so true because it's like when you kind of live that lifestyle where you get out of work and you go out with your friends and party or go to the bars. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like the same thing every time. And then you with blurry, you know, fuzzy memories. And it's like, you know, that was kind of a thing, same thing for me. I didn't want to look back at my life and it was spent at that bar right there.
Yeah.
That I can see out my window, you know, it's the same damn people, same thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's how it started too. I did hang out with friends and go to the bar in the beginning. Then it became very lonely. And it's like those friends that I had that I was using with, they only really became middlemen.
Yeah.
For drug sales. Most of the time if I wasn't at work, I'm at my house alone doing what I needed to do. And that's where it was at. Like I didn't even have that. Like and there was a couple of times that I would try to like socialize, but I'm nodding out. Like I'm nodding out of the bars. And once you start getting called out, and I can only lie so much, people aren't stupid, but in my head, I feel like I'm a great liar.
Yeah, you're like, oh.
There's something in my eye. Like, you are nodding out, and you're saying something's
so
in my eye. Like, I'm so tired. I work so much, which I did, because that's all I did. But it's kind of like, get real.
Yeah.
But, like, we think that we're believable. I thought I was believable.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know how messy I was until I got clean.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So, you've gone through... I mean, life is hard in general, but you've gone through some hard stuff lately, including, you know, loss of loved one and loss of friends as well. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with these potential triggers that would typically lead someone to going back to using? How do you get through those hard times like that when as being sober? Any tips that you want to share?
It's not always easy, and I don't do it. Like I said before, like, I don't really do what I would suggest to other people sometimes because, you know, when you're in your shit, when you're in your feelings, sometimes you don't want to change. You just want to sit there and you don't, like, I want to feel like now that I'm having feelings because I didn't have it. Like, the first time I cried in years is literally when I was getting on the plane to go to rehab because I was saying goodbye to my best friend, drugs. You know what I mean? And then, like, so then I get sober, and then I have all these feelings that I'm not used to. So it was really hard. So there are some programs that I do attend and act on. But even then, it's, like, I don't always fully go into it. So there's, you know, meetings you could go to. And then most people can tell when I'm going through something because I'll show up more. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, I really do need this.
Yeah.
But like I'll drift away from a lot of those things that I need, that I should be doing all the time because I'm living my life. And I don't suggest that for other people. Like, you know, everybody's completely different. I'm the type of person that chooses to learn everything the hard way. Like, I really do. But my family is like the best support I've ever had. I could always reach out to you.
Yeah.
And I like need real people. It's been hard. You know, I say the third year was like the hardest. I got, my third year clean, and then 3 days later is when, you know, my stepdad went in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And then he died. And then, as that time when I was dating
your ex,
my ex,
who was an addict,
he was relapsing the same time, and
which,
I had to send him to
rehab.
So
mad.
in Maryland at the same time
while dealing with that, instead of being there for you.
Yeah. And I was just like, I just couldn't, and then he got arrested, and then, so all these things were happening, and then I had financial issues, big financial issues, you know, when you, yeah, taxes, because I didn't do my taxes for so long. So yeah. I was just like,
yeah, well, deals later, kind of dealing with stuff from
yes.
the past and
yes.
current stuff and relationship. And
yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So it was all like all of those, there was big thing, and there was health issue, health scares
yeah.
and procedures, all those within like 3 months. And I was like, why am I clean? Like,
yeah.
Why the hell did I get clean for all this bad shit to happen?
Mm-hmm.
So literally I have to sit there and like, you know, using at that point seemed very good, but then I would have lost everything that I had
mm-hmm.
and I made the right choice, obviously, you know, and I stayed clean, but it wasn't easy. Like I
yeah.
felt like my whole world was crashing down and I wanted to hide in a bubble and I couldn't because I got to work. I got to take care of this because if I don't take care of all this stuff,
yeah.
cause, like I didn't before, it's just going to be a big ball of crap and it's just gonna
yeah.
weigh down on
and it
me.
Can seem really overwhelming. So
yeah.
what do you suggest advice wise to just to get through that shit instead
let it
of
play
using?
Out
yeah
do one thing at a time, which I don't always know how to do because
yeah.
I'm like ah what am I doing but like now it's 4.5 years later and all those things are being solved. I'm learning
yeah.
how to process feelings a little better. I don't always do it in the moment and sometimes I get stuck and I don't want to get out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
But like the financial stuff, it's working now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
With my ex is my ex now. You know
yes.
what I mean? I'm now engaged.
Yes.
With someone else. Like, and I never thought that would be
yeah.
ever a part of my story. The thing, you just got to play that tape out. Using is not a good idea. Using is only going to make things worse because I
right.
definitely would have dealt with all that and I would have been way worse and lost everything that I had.
And it might have been something that could have potentially been fatal because
yes.
a lot of times when people
yes.
do take a break for a long time and they use for that first time,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, and that's got to be really challenging as far as, you know, losing people in that community.
Yeah.
Cause I know personally that I, it's often that I hear you say, oh, this person just passed and they're always young and they're people that were your friends.
Yes.
And,
it was, you know, not too long ago, it was 3 friends in 1 week.
Wow.
That's insane. And like you said, the one person that
was
like
close.
My, that was my person. You
yeah.
know what I mean? That was like my best friend, you know? So it's hard. And, that could have been my area because that person, like, I thought that person, like, had everything together. Like,
wow.
that person used, well, was able to have all of those things,
mm-hmm.
you know, pay bills on time. Like, I couldn't pay bills on time. Like, my drugs came
yeah,
first.
Yeah, it's like a functioning addict.
Yeah,
basically.
Functioning addict. But in my mind, she did it so well. And it was like
so
that
you don't
person
see it as a problem.
That That's you never right. thought was her. But I think that we all think that it's never going to be us.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of times we'll hear, okay, this person overdosed, and a lot of people will go to that dealer in that area to get that drug.
What?
We
no
just think,
way.
Okay, well, they did too much. But that's what you want. You want that feeling. We don't want to die, most of
yeah.
us, or some of us. I would say some of us don't want to die.
Yeah.
When I was using, I didn't care. I didn't think I'd be 35 years old. Like, I really didn't have that in my mind that I would live this long. But I didn't care to live, but I didn't care to die because my life, like you said, Groundhog Day, like there
yeah.
was nothing interesting in my life. And when I couldn't find anything, withdrawing for me was horrible. It was absolutely
yeah.
horrible. But in reality, go through it.
Yes.
Go
deal
through
with
it.
Your shit.
Yes. Cause it's like
the
yeah.
only way out. Is through.
Yes. Go through it. Get clean.
It's hard. It's
the best thing I've ever
grow from it. You know?
Yeah.
Grow from all of that.
I'm completely different than how I was 4.5 years ago. I mean, I'm different
yeah.
from a year ago. I'm different from 4 months ago.
Always evolving. And,
yes.
You know, and now you're someone who's in a place to, you know, give advice or to share mm-hmm. your story. You know, what do you have to say to people who, because we were talking earlier with the Bill Nye quote, what do you have to say to people who look at drug abuse and addiction as, you know, a choice? Because, you know, there's that negative stigma that you know, people there, you, it's like politics and religion. You got these people
yes.
who, you know, feel this way and people who believe it, you know, as a science and a disease, and others who think, oh, they're assholes and they're making a choice.
Okay. I can say, okay, sure. That first time was a choice. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? After that, you know, it hasn't been, it wasn't for me. Especially with the drinking, that was normal. Everybody was doing it, right? So in our early 20s, like, that's normal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I didn't know it was going to affect me, and things spiraled, especially when I did my first pill. So yeah, sure. The first time is, you know, our choice, but multiple people have done coke at a party before and they don't turn out like me. You know what I mean?
And I think those are mostly the people who say that are the ones who don't understand.
Because I can do it. Like, you know, I'm not addicted, so you shouldn't be addicted. Well, when I'm a kid, when they ask me what I wanted to be when I grew up, it wasn't an addict. Like, I didn't want to be addicted. I didn't foresee the things that I've gone through in my life. Not at all. You know what I mean? So regardless whether it's, you know, a disease, a choice, or this or that, it doesn't matter.
Right.
If someone needs help, they need help. And if you have to label it, fine. That person still needs help. And I think, you know, the community, people should help other people.
Absolutely. I mean, in my opinion, it's all tied to mental health, which is absolutely an epidemic on its own. It's definitely underrecognized. There's not, in my opinion, a whole lot being done about it for a long time. And so what happens is people self-medicate. And again, you can self-medicate with social media, sex, gambling, food. Some mm-hmm. people do that with, you know, drinking and alcohol. And we live in a time now where we have the whole mommy wine sipping culture, you know, which is so normal. It's normalized to the point where people have their cute shirts like rosé all day. And, you know, pop the champagne, and it's like mommy's, you know, sippy cup, and
the weed shirts or this or that, and it's like, you know, I'm not gonna wear a shirt that, you know, so, like, have heroin,
Roxy.
or Roxy baby or whatever. I do have shirts now that says heroin sucks, so
but
wear that proud.
I feel like drinking is so normalized.
It is.
In comparison to every other thing. You know, you've got, I mean, just here in the village, you've got bars all right there, right there, right there. I mean, which is fine, you know, but to me, I feel like you kind of get lost into realizing it's a problem.
It is.
Because it's such a normal thing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is so normal. I mean, I play sports, you know, mm-hmm. I play softball, I play kickball, you know, even when you go to events, like you're saying, like I go to soccer games, I go to football games, alcohol is everywhere, mm-hmm. like everywhere. You can just go to your favorite restaurant and they're going to say happy hour.
Yeah.
So so normal.
When I was a bartender, like I would see all kinds of stuff. I remember one time bartending just down the road and this one girl, like, she's like, oh, I want to tip you, but I don't, like, she didn't have any extra cash.
Yes.
She dumped her purse out and there was like handfuls of change and like, I guess, Roxy's or whatever. And
I'm glad you don't know.
I never got into the pills. But I know. She was just like, here you go. And I remember just being like, having that moment of like, oh, this is like what everyone does. Like, this is what everyone was like talking about. It was like the big hype back then. And just being like,
still have people do that. Because the same thing in my job, like I'll have people wanting to tip with drugs. And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
No. Like, I can't do that.
It's crazy. I guess I imagine there's people out there that don't experience that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, for us, like, I feel like that was normal. I mean, when I bartended, some of the places I bartended at, I mean, I've been offered Molly. Mm-hmm. I've been offered ecstasy. I've been offered ketamine before. I've been offered everything.
I'm sure if you're a banker, that's not happening. You know what I mean? Like, so, you do see a lot of crazy things.
Yeah.
But that's for that individual that's mm-hmm. doing that, that's normal.
Yeah. And it's scary for me because, like, I never did that stuff because of my heart. I didn't want to take the risk, even though really drinking was just as bad. especially at, with, you know, with what I drank and how much I could drink. But there were times where, cause I would smoke weed at the time. I do now, but, when I would smoke occasionally. And I remember at the time I wasn't drinking, and I went, we finished working and I went with some friends, and we all, it was like probably eight of us. And it was just like after work, like, okay, maybe I'll take a puff of this joint to like just wind down this hectic, crazy bartending gig tonight. And then luckily I was sober and I was very aware of my surroundings. I was paying attention. You know, everyone else was drunk because they were all drinking. But I watched the guy rolling the joint, sprinkling Molly into the joint. And I was just like, all right, I'm out. And I was just like, all right, I'm taking off, guys. And I left. But like, he wasn't telling anybody. He didn't say, oh, hey, by the way, this has Molly in it. He just was straight up like, no big deal.
Yeah, no big deal. When you're in that, like, you know, there's tons of stuff that I did not fully knowing what it was. I would do things like, I'm this naive. Like, let me just tell you. My mom, like, she didn't do like drugs. It wasn't around me. It wasn't normal. I didn't, like, my mom was, you know, strict. Like, so I didn't really like get out until, you know, I was kicked out 18 because of bad decisions, bad relationships, you know. And she couldn't deal with, you know, the abuse that I was going through. So I was kicked out. I don't even know where I was going with this. What the
hell? I was telling you about getting Molly to join us.
So. I don't know. So it just became like, I don't know where I was going.
Well, I don't know.
But if it's I would get like anything was thrown in front of you, and I didn't know like anything I was doing at the time. Like, you know, like doing pills, it was like an aspirin. When I was first offered heroin, I didn't know it was heroin.
Wow.
The person that gave it to me was, you know, also an ex, and he's like, he called it H. So most people would like gather that, right? But I'm like, this isn't gonna, like, what is this? Like, is this, you know, and I asked them, like, is this heroin? And he said, no, you know, you'll be fine. And I believed him. I mean, I was already, you know, withdrawing.
And how did you take it? Was this through?
This, it was snorting, you know, so it was just powder and you snorted it. But
See, that's another thing that scared me. Cause like, for me, being naive, I've not been really exposed to heroin. So when I think of heroin, I think of, you know, putting it on the spoon and, you know, taking it.
It doesn't always start that way.
And I think I think you can smoke something. That's all. I don't know. So it's scary to me that someone who could be basically thinking they are just doing a bump of coke that they do maybe like twice a year or, you know, once in a blue moon.
I know.
It's actually
people.
Fucking heroin.
Yeah, fentanyl. A lot of people, I know multiple people that think they're at a party and doing coke and it's actually fentanyl, or they're laced together. That's the thing, is where you're just putting all this random stuff in your body and not knowing what it is.
Yeah.
And like I said, like heroin, H, like, why did I put that? And I think I knew, but I didn't want to know. So because I was hurting and because I'm just like, I used to be such a people pleaser and, you know, wanting this person to like me and never feeling good enough. And so it was just easier just to
yourself work.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, hey, because I never thought, like, if you would have seen me, like, you know, younger years, like, you would have never thought. Even my mom. My mom was like, never thought it would be you.
They never knew. And I think that's what makes it scary too, is that, you know, a lot of that does, at the end of the day, how do you not say it doesn't stem from mental health? Because, I mean, we're showing here that you had low self-worth. I had no self-worth in my 20s. I mean, and so to me, that's part of mental health. That's depression, I mean, or anxiety.
I have depression and anxiety.
Absolutely.
Especially social anxiety. And then it's kind of like, being in front of those groups, being at the bar, and like being so like sheltered.
Your social anxiety almost goes
like
away.
Shell. Yeah, I can be the person that I wanted to be. That cool chick at the bar that probably doesn't seem so cool anymore. like being all crazy, like that was me.
Yeah.
But I was not like that being sober. I wasn't like that before.
Same.
So
I became super shy.
Yeah. So I became someone that, you know, that was more
the
accepted.
Person you wish you could be.
Yep.
In a way.
Yep. Yeah, because you're a reader. I mean, you're kind of quiet and stuff too. So it's we became people that we wanted to be.
Yeah. I feel like now we're pretty comfortable with talking. And
yeah.
Not painfully shy, but you know, just
hiding under the table.
But you know, it's just something to keep it in perspective that, you know, all of the different elements and things that can lead someone into falling down that rabbit hole. You know, that's my whole thing. I just want to change people's opinions because I hate that conversation. And even just like we took that Narcan class together.
Yes.
And just the comments that will go on that guy's page when he says like, oh, we just trained all these people to save a life, you know, and people have the negative view on that even. Like, oh, you know, that's their choice, like let them die, or like it's insane.
Or the money that you have to use for those. But I was never given any Narcan free ever.
Mm-hmm.
Like I went to rehab, which I had to pay X amount of money, or my father, thank God.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, like was able to do that for me.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, like anything that I had gotten, it was
through
something like that, or I had bought and I handed out, you know, to certain people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wasn't just giving that for free.
And
that's what a lot of people say. It's because, like, it should go towards something else or this and that, or it's their choice. Let them die. Like, no.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, I know a lot of people that overdosed and they were brought back and they're living, like, these amazing, wonderful lives and they turned
around.
Well,
not only that, too, but, like, you know, one of the things that got me is that I had open heart surgery in 2011 and I had a patch on my arm when I came home. I didn't know what that was. And I was reading the directions like, okay, after 3 days, swap the patch out. And I was taking pain pills. I mean, my sternum was broken. So, you know, I was taking those and I was following the directions. I read the bottle, take every whatever, and switch the patch out. Well, it was that third day, and I don't know what this patch is, but that's what the doctors told me. So I took the patch off, threw it away. I put my new patch on, and I don't know how long it took, but the next thing you know, I was laying on my bathroom floor because of the cold tile with my face on it, and just I felt like I was dying. Like my, you know, because what happens with that is it slows your respiratory system down, as well as your heart rate. And so it can get to the point where it slows down so much to where you just don't breathe. And that's typically what happens. And so I remember having like a frozen blueberries on my face and it was like 4 a.m. and I didn't want to wake anyone. So I was stupid enough to just be like, I think I'll be okay. And fortunately I was. And so it turns out the patch was fentanyl and it was way too heavy for me. And, you know, I'm someone who was a patient who was prescribed these things that could have overdosed. And because people are so against Narcan and training and things like that, like, and that was another thing too. I wasn't even offered that. They didn't even say like when I went and got all my meds, you know, hey, you should just in case.
Yeah. I mean, you can hear many stories of people overdose and they're prescribed and they're doing it correctly. Because, I mean, I've watched many documentaries since being clean. Like, I wouldn't watch that stuff beforehand. But it happens so often. And I think, like, now people are taking notice.
Yeah.
And things are changing and they close down a lot of the, you know, pill doctor shops and farms and all this. So it's helped have awareness, but why did we have this problem before? Because it was easily prescribed.
And luckily I knew I was smart enough to take the patch off when I realized like that's what it was. But if I were, being that it was 4 a.m, I could have easily been like, well, I'm tired and went to sleep and probably not woken up. And so nobody in my house would have had Narcan, you know, we would have had to wait it. So I don't know. I think it's an important thing to have, you know, and for people to understand and be trained. So I love that. Well, I'll have to link his page on
the
blog post, you know, so people can find him and do the training.
Yeah, he's cool. He's a cool dude. And like he said, he's never touched, you know, drugs.
But he's
willing to help. And a lot, I know firefighters and some people might get tired of saving the same person over and over again. Like, you just want to, like, shake them, like, get it. You know what I mean? Understand that you can't do this. But, you should not help someone.
Absolutely.
You should always, you know, have a handout to help.
Yeah.
I don't care if I have to repeat myself 1,000 times. Like, I will still be there.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
And so do you have any, like, why don't you talk about your social media, how people can reach out?
I mean, you can, it's just Red Campitelli, whether it's on Instagram or Facebook, do the Instagram a little more. But you can reach out for there, you know, and like, and my story isn't everybody's story, and you know, I may be able to help someone, I might not be able to help someone, but I'm here. I'm at least here to listen, because I don't always have the right thing to say. So sometimes I won't say it. I can just tell you what I've gone through and my experiences, but I will encourage you to do something, like push you in the right direction, or, you know, if something doesn't work for you, that doesn't mean stop.
Right.
Try something else. Always try to better yourself. And I think that's where, like, you know, I'm at in my life. It's like, this isn't working, I'm going to try to do this. But I'm just always trying to be positive and to keep going forward.
Yeah.
Like, it's really, you know, during the COVID, like, when it first started happening, they're like, stay away from everybody. And, you know, I'm living in my, you know, home by myself. Like, and they're like, don't hang out with your family and don't do this. Stay at your house.
Yeah.
I got really, it was not good. And I would try to do these activities, and I would try to social distance. And then ultimately, like, I couldn't, like, I had to be around people. Like, I went up north, I had to go to the mountains. Like, it was very hard for me to just sit there. So it's like, I just, you know, do something.
Yeah.
Do something
and
to better
yourself.
You
always can go on a hike, be in nature, there's therapy. I did want to drop the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is 800-273-TALK, which is 1-800-273-8255. Just in case, because, you know, you can always reach out to that.
Yeah.
If you're local in Brevard, there's 211. There's a lot of resources with that. If you're not local, you know, see what resources are available in your area. You know, yeah, there's things to try.
Yes. I mean, that's why I'm so, like, open about it, because a lot of people, like, I felt like I was alone.
Yeah.
Like, I did. Like, I remember discussing in my early using days, like, I needed help. And I was made fun of, and I was told it was a zombie. And so instead of helping, you made fun of me. That makes me not want to talk about it.
Yeah.
So I didn't. I deny. So
that's gonna be hard.
Yeah. Like, so I'm so open. I'm in a place where I'm okay. And my job doesn't, you know, I'm able to be open about it with my job, you know.
Which is important. Because that always brings me on another topic I'm passionate about, which is toxic positivity. So, you know, I feel like because people are afraid to talk about anything other than happiness and joy, it's considered negative and they're not allowed to do that. So if we could all be more open about letting people bitch and complain if they have to, or be sad or be grieving or angry or need help, then people would be more likely to reach out and ask for help. But
yes,
people are scared to ask for help because, you know, they don't want to be Debbie Downer or Negative Nancy or whatever.
Or made fun of. and that was, like, a big thing. Like, being made fun of when you're like, well, shit, I guess I'm stuck here. And I stayed in addiction for years after that. Not saying, like, that could have changed something, but it didn't also need to happen. When I'm basically telling you I need help, and I didn't know what to do. Because I didn't know I needed help until, like, I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah, and maybe if you do ask for help, and that person does act like an asshole, then
you
ask
reach
for
out
to somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a thing with my friends, because I have a lot of, with my health issues, I felt like for a minute that I kind of got resentful towards my friends mm-hmm. and was upset because I felt like when I would talk about things, they wouldn't really know how to respond.
Mm-hmm.
And I took it personal. And really, it was like they just felt bad and they didn't know what to say. It was difficult. They didn't know how to respond. That's mm-hmm. as simple as that. And I took it as like, oh, they'll talk about, you know, what they had for lunch or shopping. And so then I realized I needed a therapist. Yes. I needed to hire someone whose job it was to listen to my heavy ass shit, because that's what they're meant to do. And you can't always expect a person or an individual, whether it's your friends or a loved one even, or your family, to take on your shit. And so sometimes it's really important to see a therapist or like going to meetings, like you said, because those people in those meetings, they get it. They've been through it. Yeah. They understand.
Other Someone that has like issues don't. Can help. Because mm-hmm. like, okay, so you know, have heart issues. I'm going to say, that really sucks. Like, I'm that girl. It's okay. I'm here for you. But yeah. really, like, you know, you're going to go through things and I don't understand. So I don't know how to respond.
Right.
So that's like why it is you need someone who's been in the same spot, or some people, you know, therapists work.
Yeah.
But at least you're talking about it and you're doing something about it versus sitting there.
Yeah.
For me, it's easier to sit in that and complain and be upset mm-hmm. than doing the work.
Yeah.
So
yeah, for me, it was
work.
Just for me with my depression and mm-hmm. everything, it was changing my lifestyle to stop drinking, to hang out with my good friends, like
yeah.
focus on the good people in my life. I did a little bit of therapy, even just with diet, like nutrition, eating cleaner. So lots of self-help, reading, like keeping that information in your brain, whether it's like you're reading self-help books or you're following, like on Instagram, for example, those type of self-help pages to kind of keep
mm-hmm.
that daily, like affirmations, basically,
mm-hmm.
you know, so everyone's going to have like their own unique thing that helps them. So find that.
Yes. I mean, that's what you know, I've been going through. I'm eating different, losing weight, and that's
yeah.
even like that took me a long, long time. And it was easier just.
And you look amazing. You lost how much?
25 pounds.
That's awesome. And you're doing keto, and you're doing like kickboxing and stuff.
Kickboxing, jiu-jitsu.
That's cool.
You know, I kickball.
Yeah.
I kickball. I mean, and a lot of it, I owe, you know, just entering that positivity to my fiance, Keller, because I didn't have that and I didn't know and I was stuck. And then it was like, you know, I've known him 20 years ago and then getting to know him again now, just being around positive people and him helping me that
yeah.
and doing that or pushing me when I don't want to be pushed, which now I'm like the happiest I've ever been in my life.
That's awesome. Everything just came together.
Yes.
And, you know, and this is 4 years clean. I mean, so it takes time, but during those 4 years, you've grown so much. You've learned how to adult and take care
pay
of
bills
shit,
on time.
Pay your bills.
Yes.
You've fallen in love. You feel good about yourself. You've discovered your worth.
Yes.
And this is all stuff that took time and it took patience and hard work and, you know, you can have a successful outcome, you know?
Yeah. Especially, I think a lot of people think that I'm clean now, I'm clean today, could be like 2 days or a month or a year or whatever. And they just, if things don't go our way, we're just like I said, 3 years, you know, on mm-hmm. my third year, I was like, why am I clean? Sometimes that stuff takes time. To get where you're at. Like, it's not everything's just gonna, like, you get clean and your whole life is better.
Right.
Like, it's not gonna happen.
Yeah, no matter what, we're gonna have mm-hmm. shit thrown our way because it's a slide.
It's
so, like, well, even if you're not an addict, we all have to figure out how to cope, and everyone copes differently. It's a
mm-hmm.
matter of finding a healthy way to cope. You might think, oh, just because I don't do drugs, you know, you got your shit together, but that's not the
yeah.
case. Like, people can have, you know, narcissistic personalities, or they can have
yeah,
toxic characteristic qualities. sorry, it's my good. She knows I complain a lot about stuff like that. But anyway, you know, people have behavioral issues that are not healthy, that have nothing to do with, you know, drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
So it's all a matter of just all of us trying to work on our mental health and self-care and be healthy and how we deal with shit.
And just, like, for us, it's just, like, being a better person, trying to be there for other people.
I love it.
Yay, well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. All right, bye, guys. Thanks for listening.